This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
So urban centers shouldn't be regarded as inevitable hotspots. But we have seen some congested quarters hit hard by the spread of COVID-19, namely our prisons and jails.
Coronavirus within New York City jails is spreading at a rate, get this, 7 times faster than in New York City itself.
I'm Omar Jimenez in Chicago. Cook County Jail here, the largest single-site jail in the country, is now the largest known source of coronavirus infections in the country outside of medical facilities.
Coronavirus spreading rapidly among Ohio inmates. Nearly 4,000 cases confirmed at prisons across that state.
Earlier this month, one of those Ohio inmates incarcerated at federal prison FCI Elkton posted a video to Facebook Live using a smuggled cell phone in which he implored the public.
We can't social distance. Pray, whatever y'all got to do. Whoever y'all pray to, pray. And ain't no protection for the inmates. They don't care if you die or not.
Yet another case of the notion of the virus as a great equalizer proving to be a triumph of hope over experience. Ashley Rubin is a professor of sociology specializing in penal history at the University of Hawaii, Manoa. She says that what makes jails so susceptible isn't just the crowding, it's also the isolation and neglect.
The concentration of human life in such tight quarters as you would get in, say, elderly care facilities or cruise ships, it's worsened by other factors, including the lack of the ability to stay clean. A lot of prisoners, for example, have to purchase soap, use watered-down shampoo. Keeping clean in the same way that we're told to of washing your hands is quite difficult in a prison.
You made the observation that jails and prisons also concentrate people who have pre-existing conditions and older people.
The situation with our disproportionate representation of elderly people in prisons has to do with our really long sentences, 20 years, 30 years, life. You end up with people who have been in the prison for decades, and even people who are kind of middle age have the same health status as an older person because it's hard to live in a prison. It takes a toll on you.
You've noted an ebb and flow in the conditions of our prisons. So let's start before the beginning. Lousy prison conditions were a tradition in the colonial era, right?
Right. What we had before we had prisons as we think of them today were jails. And jails were just these usually large rooms filled with a whole bunch of different people, not just convicted criminals, but accused criminals, witnesses, debtors, vagrants, people who had already been tried and who were awaiting their punishment in just one big room. And so they're very overcrowded, dirty, and then, of course, people would also have disease.
After the revolution, our earliest reformers emerged, and they were influenced by their counterparts in England. John Howard is a person you particularly note.
Yeah, so he was a British noble or aristocrat who became a sheriff, and unlike most sheriffs, actually went and visited his jail and was horrified by what he saw. He talked about various cases where people had caught disease in the jail and then spread it to other places. So he talks about the black assizes of 1577, where people were brought into court, what they called assizes, and within 40 hours, over 300 people had died because the prisoners had brought the disease with them into the courtroom and everybody at court that day was exposed.
Then we got some penal reformers. One of them was Benjamin Rush, and he promoted all sorts of changes. That's how we got what is now known as the prison uniform, right?
Right. You would also be bathed. The jail was also supposed to be regularly cleaned. The prisoners slept on straw at the time, and so that straw had to be changed on a weekly basis. There would also be a physician.
Do you think that part of the reason for worrying about prisoners is because some of the people holding the keys identified with them, that there was a certain there but for the grace of God go I feeling after the revolution?
Definitely. During the American Revolution, loyalists were put into jail or put to death. The founding fathers themselves knew that there's a very real chance that they could be executed one day. So this idea that it's not just kind of people who are different from us, but really all of us could be a criminal at one time or another. If that's the case, we want to make sure that our punishments are, you know, decent and humane. Over the course of the 18th century, various political theorists championed the rights of individuals. And as part of that, they didn't believe that governments have the right to execute people.
How about capitalism?
In fact, one of the arguments was, we want our country to grow, we want our markets to grow, and we probably shouldn't be executing our workers because workers are so scarce. And also, if you execute too many of them, then that kind of increases the power of the worker and they can demand better working conditions and better wages. And so instead, there's this notion that we need to essentially recycle our people. We need to take them from criminals and reform them into, the phrase that they used was, industrious, virtuous, useful citizens.
You mean productive members of society, which is how that phrase has come down to us today?
Yeah, exactly.
So given all of this, can you give me an example of a jail in America acting effectively to prevent the spread of a contagious disease?
Sure. So Walnut Street Jail, which eventually became Walnut Street Prison, they suffered several yellow fever epidemics in Philadelphia, first in 1793 and another major one in 1798. And they were pretty good about releasing people when they first showed symptoms and diverting them to the makeshift hospital at Bush Hill that was designed for treating people with yellow fever.
Prison officials actually started competing over which prison had the lowest death rate in the late 18th and early 19th centuries?
They would write these annual reports, and a large chunk of it would be about the health of the prisoners, which, by the way, were also published in the newspapers and literary magazines around the country. So everybody could read these.
When did jails and prisons stop emphasizing the spread of infectious disease?
In the 1970s, we see this idea that prisons are supposed to be painful, which historically wasn't really something you were supposed to say out loud. It was considered unseemly. In the last couple of decades, it's been something that people aren't embarrassed to favor. They think it's a good thing, and it's been pretty much in vogue. Before, in the 50s and 60s, we called them correctional institutions. Prisoners were given therapy, they were given access to books and writing, educational classes. In the 1970s, we started to remove those items. There was a belief that if prisoners are essentially just bad people, then we just should lock them up and throw away the key. We embarked on what we call mass incarceration. And even though we were building many more prisons than we've ever done before, we still didn't have enough beds to put everybody in. And so overcrowding really became a problem in the 1970s onwards.
What about mass release of prisoners? With regard to the coronavirus, I think in New York, there's actually been some release of older prisoners. Aren't people worried about them bringing disease into their communities?
These prisons are just going to explode with coronavirus cases, as is already happening in Ohio and some other places. And the problem is, we can't really just throw away the key this time. There's still correctional officers going in and out of these prisons, and then they bring it home to their families and to their communities. And one consequence of this that my colleague John Easton has mentioned is because so many correctional officers are disproportionately African-American and Latinx, in addition to all the other vulnerabilities these communities are experiencing, prison officers coming home from prisons with the disease might be one vector that's causing the disproportionate impact of coronavirus on these Black and Brown communities.
There's been a lot of conversation about how the coronavirus could change America in some fundamental ways. The New York Times was addressing the issue of inequality. The environment has come up. Do you see any changes in our penal system as a result of the coronavirus?
A number of prison abolitionists are pretty optimistic that some of the policies that they've been working really hard to get passed for decades at this point might actually go through. It's kind of like universal basic income that, you know, now something that's a fringe idea is actually pretty mainstream. But I think there's also a possibility that we go in the other direction. There's already a lot of apathy towards a number of vulnerable groups, from Asian Americans experiencing hate crimes to even healthcare workers out there fighting for us. We've already seen how many thousands of Americans have died, and we're not seeing as much of an outcry as I probably thought we would have. And if that's our reaction to, you know, free Americans, how are we going to react to, you know, thousands of incarcerated people dying?
Ashley, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Ashley Rubin is a professor of sociology specializing in penal history at the University of Hawaii, Manoa. Her recent piece in The Conversation is entitled, "Prisons and Jails Are Coronavirus Epicenters, but They Were Once Designed to Prevent Disease Outbreaks."
Coming up, wildlife is now roaming abandoned city streets. Is humanity the virus?
This is On the Media.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing. Or
politics.
Country music.
Hockey.
Sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.